to New York and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. On today's show, as we continue our special series called The Neonicotinoid View, my co-host Tom Thebold and I will be joined by Jeff Anderson, the owner of California Minnesota Honey Farms, which is a commercial migratory beekeeping operation. Jeff also represents the beekeeping industry on the National Beekeeping Advisory Board and the National Pollinator Defense Fund. Today, he will discuss the critical state of California's almond pollination industry. So I would first like to welcome to the show my co-host, Tom Thebold. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hello, June.
And our guest today, Mr. Jeff Anderson. Good afternoon, Jeff, and welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, June. Thanks for the invitation.
Jeff, can you please tell our audience about yourself and also about what your business does?
Yeah, as June mentioned, I'm a commercial migratory beekeeper. I utilize my bee operation in two ways. We pollinate spring fruit and nut crops in California, and we do honey production in central Minnesota during the summer months. Been at this for some length of time, as I started right out of high school in 1976 and have been keeping bees since.
Thank you. Jeff, can you explain to our audience exactly how your operation works, especially since it's that time of the year again where you're moving your colonies in or to begin the almond pollination process?
Yes, we are actually putting in bees last week and the beginning of this week into the pollination situation here with almonds. The almond orchards in California are just ready to break into bloom. The way the year breaks out is we start, I like to think of it as starting in mid to late April, and we actually make our divide our hives to make up losses from the previous season. After we get our hive count up where we like that, we take the bees back to Minnesota. They summer there all summer long in the same locations. We primarily produce honey there. In the fall of the year, we remove the honey in August and September and extract that. And at that point, we sort through the colonies and try and bring the colonies out that we're relatively sure will be useful for pollination. The bees come to in my operations case, we bring the bees to California in late October, early November, and they sit in winter stockpile locations from then until they're needed this time of the year for almond pollination.
Thank you.
Jeff, could you just give us a little overview of the almonds, how many acres are involved, and how many colonies are required, and how many did you move to California this last fall?
Yeah, I can do that. There's currently, the almond industry is in a bit of an expansion, so the number might be slightly higher than what I'm going to tell you, but there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 750,000 acres of producing almonds in California, and most almond growers rent right at two hives per acre to pollinate their crop. And the number of colonies that I brought to California is a fairly insignificant number when you look at the great big picture, but for me it's significant. I mean, it feeds my family. We start off our season in the spring of the year, this in 2012, I had 3,150 colonies that we started the season with. We had some summer mortality, which is used to be quite abnormal, but it seems to be becoming the normal, which brought my number down in the fall that we actually brought to California 1,950 about, and the number that we're placing into almond pollination after we sorted out the hives that died over winter is now only 950 colonies.
Now, I'm a small commercial honey producer, and my numbers are much smaller than yours, but to me these seem to be extremely significant losses, and I've been reading some of the news articles that have come out, and I read one where they quoted a Montana beekeeper who'd had 10,000 colonies and had lost 7,000 of those, and he was quoted as saying, "We'll be back again strong as ever. It's just one of those glitches." Could you comment on that? Is that what you're seeing? Do you think this is just part of the ups and downs of agriculture?
Agriculture does have ups and downs. He is correct about that. But usually it's more like little ripples, not major tsunamis. I know for my operation, I've had a small family operation, my wife and I, and we employ three of my adult children. And we're seriously looking at other ways to earn income here rather than just relying 100% on our bee operation, because even though I do have enough nickels in the bank today to rebuild, even if I want to rebuild, I can't come from a number of less than 1,000 colonies and get back up to the number of 3,000 plus that I normally run in the spring. So it's sometimes it's easy to, you know, pretend that you can put a, you know, just man up and do it, but sometimes the reality is not quite that way.
Jeff, how have you been keeping your colonies alive?
Well, apparently, with the numbers I just gave you, not too well. we do, and the fact is that the fact that I'm still keeping bees after this many years is a commercial operation. If you were aware how intense this has been over the years, I mean, we've had introductions of several pests from other parts of the world that have, you know, created mortality events in the bee population. We've had increases in viruses, and I know that you've talked about a number of these things on other programs with when you discuss bees, but this is different. These losses that we have here, in my case, you know, we're pushing 70% really close, and that's a loss that you just cannot come back from effectively.
Jeff, news reports are suggesting that these losses are attributable to such things as drought and poor nutrition and lack of forage, lack of habitat. Do you have some feeling for what you think the major cause of these problems are?
I'm going to make a long answer to that question, Tom, because everyone knows that the central part of the United States was in a severe drought this year. I mean, it's unquestioned. But having said that mouthful, my area of Minnesota actually produced an above-average honey crop this year. We had rain into early July, which caused the bee population in my hives was fairly good. The fact that the other thing that was of interest is our honey crop came in quite late in my area in Minnesota this year, and usually when the bees are out working natural forage and producing honey and the corresponding pollen and stuff that they have to gather to raise brood, they store a lot of that for overwinter use, and the colony should go into the fall and winter situation quite healthy. And what I saw was basically the exact opposite. Last year, the Midwest was in a fairly severe drought. I had the shortest crop I had on record in my operation last year, and my overwinter losses were significantly lower than they are this year. And it appears like what's going on here is the natural forage that the bees are bringing in is carries some degree of contamination that the bees are unable to tolerate as they try and live on those resources over the winter.
What sort of contamination are you talking about?
Well, we have quite a variety of pesticides that we think can cause contamination. In my specific operation, there's quite a bit of corn planted around my hives or in the geographic area where I keep my hives. And not just corn, but we also have a lot of soybeans in the area. Both of those crops are planted now utilizing systemic insecticides, seed-coated insecticides. And what I observe is I have a little bit of a mortality event when the crop is actually planted, but later in the season when the crop comes into bloom, you know, for soybeans that would be obviously when they start producing nectar during the bloom period when they're getting ready to set the bean, and for corn it's when the plant comes into pollen shed. And
the pesticide involved would be the neonicotinoids, the systemic pesticides that have gotten so much press recently. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. And there's two of them that they utilize quite regularly. Clothiodin is the primary one, and some of the time they utilize thiamethoxin as a refuge in the bag is what they term it as. But the idea was to have integrated pest management, and I find it of interest that the fact that they used to utilize untreated seeds as refuge in the bag. Now they just treat them with a different chemistry often.
So integrated pest management has become integrated pesticide management. Is that what you're saying?
Well, in some cases, I think that would probably be fairly accurate, yes.
And I've read, and I know it's common knowledge amongst the beekeepers, that about 242 million acres of agricultural land are planted to crops with treated seed. 92 million acres of that would be represented by corn. And I've been told recently that the amount of land that's being treated with these systemic pesticides amounts to about 40% of the physical land area of the United States. Is that accurate?
Well, I'm not sure on the United States basis, but in my area of Minnesota, I think that's probably very accurate. It's probably about 40% of the land mass is treated that way. I think there's, you know, geographically that will vary quite a bit because obviously if you've been on a road trip through Iowa or Illinois or Indiana, there's fence row to fence row planting. In my area of Minnesota, it used to be dairy land, and so there is some pasture land and natural woods and stuff. And so I think depending on the geographic area of the United States, it could be significantly higher than that. But in my area of Minnesota, I would pin it somewhere in the 40% range, yes.
Now, Jeff, because of everything that's been going on, what are the almond growers going to do, especially without the numbers that they need as far as bees to pollinate their crops?
Well, you know, it would be nice if I was the only bee operation that was experiencing this kind of mortality, but frankly, that's not true.
Mm.
This is pretty wide. There's a lot of bee operations that are experiencing fairly heavy overwinter mortality, much higher than the 30% plus or minus that USDA has been reporting here in the last few years. I don't know exactly where that number is going to come down this winter, but I suspect it's going to be close to 50% or maybe exceeding that. There's some bee operations that appear, depending on what part of the country they came from, are not experiencing significant losses, but it appears to be tied to the crops that they summered next to. The more natural wild things that they had in the area, the native forage seemed to improve the overwintering ability of their colonies.
If we accept the fact that there have been significant damages from these systemic pesticides, there's a commercial beekeeper in Grass Valley, California, Randy Oliver, who's been outspoken on these issues, and he's said just recently that essentially this is an economic issue, that if the pollination fees are high enough, the beekeepers will come up with the bees. Do you agree with that view?
We used to think that everything was based strictly in economics, but I know for my operation, it doesn't make any difference what dollar number my almond grower is willing to pay. I don't have safe summer forage area to produce the more hives that they would like to have. And the other thing I would say about that is there's a number of our bee researchers that feel like the appropriate thing for beekeeper to do would be to move to an area that's potentially less contaminated. That's really not a good option because it's like over-pasturing a pasture with too many cattle. You can only put so many beehives in a specific area and expect them to do well.
Well, it's not like we have a wide variety of choices where you can move the bees to begin with. So many acres have been contaminated with the neonicotinoids. I mean, Tom, can you share with our audience exactly how many acres do you think have been contaminated at this point by neonicotinoids?
The records show us that 240 million acres of agricultural land have been planted to crops treated seed. And in addition to that, we have an unknown number of acres in urban and suburban environments where there may be the most heavy use of these systemic pesticides. Mm-hmm. So as Jeff mentioned earlier, there is no safe haven. There's very little areas. There are very few areas in the United States where a beekeeper can put his bees and be free of the influence of these systemic pesticides. Corn has been a major cause for concern simply because so many acres of corn are being grown and virtually all of the corn seed being planted is treated seed.
I think it's interesting that the gentleman that you just mentioned seemed to think that it's simply an economic issue. That would be great if we could just simply make bees appear out of thin air, but that's not the case. You can't just produce all these colonies overnight. Jeff, what is your response to anyone that would offer you even triple the amount of money that you're currently getting to produce more colonies? I mean, is that even possible?
Well, like I say, I'm not sure that it's even possible. And actually, that's more or less what's going on in the almond industry right now is because of the shortfall, there's some growers and actually some fairly large almond growers that are still scrambling to try and find bees to pollinate their 2013 crop. The price that growers are paying this year is just, I can't wrap my mind around the disparity in the price because I know beekeepers that signed in early that are renting bees for about $140 per colony, and there are growers today that are offering $220 per colony in hopes of catching the last colonies that might still be loose and available. You know, the price is completely in between those two points, and we have had a fairly stable almond price that has been in the 140 to 160 range for quite a number, several years now, because the supply, when the almond price originally jumped and when colony collapse disorder originally showed up and the colony price per colony jumped up to probably from $50 to $135 all in one season, it's kind of just crept up from that point. But this year we've got this real disparity of price, and it has to do 100% with the fact that beekeepers are no longer able to put an adequate supply out here.
And it's unfortunate that with the pollination industry, this is truly operated by Americans, and this isn't something where they can just outsource it like they do in other industries. This is affecting Americans that have had businesses such as yours, fourth generation family, and you're looking at the end of a family-owned operation, which has basically been the backbone of our country, all for the sake of the widespread use of neonicotinoids.
Paramount Farms is a major producer of almonds, and their entomologist, Gordon Wardell, has said that, well, you know, this is just like not having quite enough icing for a very large cake. The suggestion is that this is just a blip, and that's what the Montana beekeeper has suggested. This is just a glitch. If we get by the almond pollination this year, what do you think we have to expect next year? Are we going to pull out of this, or is it going to be worse?
Well, realistically, I wish it were a glitch, but the reality is, let me lay this out a little bit. It's not like a bee operation that we can't run down to Walmart and buy bee colonies to make up our losses. They have to come from within our beekeeping industry. And we have an extremely late bloom in progress, or about to become in progress here on almonds right now. And we have pretty well depleted the bee supply clear over on the east coast of the United States. Just about every live hive of bees that's palletized that can be moved easily is in California right now to pollinate, which has created a situation where there's not a lot of pollinators left to pollinate things in Florida and Georgia and that portion of the world. The other thing that's occurring is that the bees that normally came from that part of the world return there. They build the colonies up in a relatively short period of time, and then they do pollination contracts up the East Coast. Apples, blueberries, cranberries, various other pollinations along the East Coast all the way up clear to the Canadian border. Beekeepers that I'm associated with that work on the East Coast tell me that the calendar is not going to allow them the privilege of taking these bees back into the southeast part of the United States this year and then take them north, because it's such a narrow window that it's not cost effective to do that. Now, at face value, that doesn't sound like it's a problem, but a number of those operations are able to use the surplus field bees from their colonies and sell those to people that raise queen bees and produce packaged bees for use across to build up bees in the upper Midwest.
Packages would be replacements for colonies that have been lost. Packages
right.
would be used to start new colonies, right?
Start new colonies. They use bulk bees and put together with a freshly raised queen, and you can put that into bee equipment, and with the use of a few feed supplements, you can jump that into a hive of bees and restart a colony. And it appears like if things shake out the way they currently look like they will, that the southeastern part of the United States is going to be out of the package business this year for all intents and purposes, and they produce quite a number of package bees. And related to that is in the northern part of California, a large portion of the queens that are raised for the bee industry are raised up in the northern part of the San Joaquin Valley or Sacramento Valley, to be more specific. A number of the queen breeding operations have also had significant overwintering losses, Part of, besides raising queens, part of what they do there as well is they encourage the size of their hives to expand, and they siphon the extra bees off, and they also produce packaged bees on the West Coast that end up going back to the central part of the United States to make up overwintering losses. A number of these queen-producing operations have taken significant overwinter losses, and they don't have enough surplus hives to produce the normal number of bulk bees that are needed to produce these packages. So
there's going to be a shortage of replacement colonies from beekeepers who would split their own. But in addition to that, if they choose to buy packages from producers, those are going to be in limited supply as well. How much would a package of bees cost for a larger operator where you're buying a significant number? What would the cost per package be?
Well, I'm not sure on the package cost, because that's something that I've not done, is purchase packages in my own operation. The way I make up my personal losses is we're in California, and the bees, because spring does come early here, we are able to get our own hives generally to build up to nice populous colonies, and then we split them, and we purchase queens, and then split the colony and add a purchased queen to the queenless half, and we can able to double our colony numbers that way. The other part that plays in here is because the loss has been pretty widespread across bee operations, it's one of those situations where it doesn't make any difference how many dollars I offer a queen producer for queens. They're just simply not in a position to supply the vast number that we need to replace everybody's lost colonies this year. So even if I had the resources in my operation to actually purchase these, it's not a matter whether, you know, I mean, they're not available or will be in limited supply anyway.
If you were to split every colony you had, that's still, you're still going to fall far short of your 3,000 that you started out last spring with. How do you get back to where you were?
Well, that's a really good question, Tom, because I've kept bees for a long time, and I really don't know how to answer that question, because I don't think I can get there from here. If your colony strength is really good, and you summer bee, or your bees are in California in the spring, sometimes you can split 3-1, but the hive strength is actually reduced as well on the remaining hives. We lost a lot of colonies, but the hive strength of the remaining colonies is also reduced.
And won't that cut into your honey production in the coming summer?
Absolutely, but back to your more immediate question, it also cuts into my ability to produce more colonies, because they're not populous starting off the spring, and it's difficult to get them to catch up to the point where we can make adequate numbers of splits to move forward.
So the bottom line is, when it comes to the cost of food, the public can definitely expect that the cost will be rising.
For pollinated crops, yes.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I'm very sorry that this is what you're experiencing. It's something that we've been talking about for a couple of years now, and unfortunately, everything that has been discussed by the scientists, by Tom, by the beekeeping community is really starting to come to fruition. So, Jeff, please keep us posted, and by all means, we'd love to have you come back, and hopefully you'll have better news to share with us about what's going on in your business.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Thank you, Jeff.
And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Steuer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.